Hey, I'm Robert Vinlow, and I'm from New York Times Games, and I'm here talking to people about Wordle and the Wordle Archive. Do you all play Wordle?
Yeah.
I have something exciting to show you.
Oh, okay.
It's the Wordle Archive.
Oh!
Oh,
and so you if keep I miss your... it, I can like go back.
100%.
Oh, that's sick.
So now you can play every Wordle that has ever existed. There's like 1,000 puzzles.
Oh my god, I love it.
Amazing. New York Times Games subscribers can now access the entire Wordle Archive. Find out more at nytimes.com/games.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your I took my Bugatti to the beach and drove it into the ocean of music, news, and criticism. I'm John Caramonica, critic at the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli, a reporter at the same New York Times.
The very same. The very same.
Throwing petals like, do you love me or not? Head is spinning and they don't know when to stop.
It's Bieber season. It's Bieber Valley. Is back. Bugatti Bieber is back. Swag is back. 2012 is back. A number of things are happening in the world of pop music that were not happening 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's exciting to have something of substance and texture and curiosity to talk about after what has felt like even the roughest and friskiest of our current pop stars still feel very much polished. It reminds me of something that I think you told me about basketball, which is everybody's played in the AAU. So it's like everybody is a pro before they get to the pros. So even the people who are the edgy people are like not that edgy. That's how I'm starting to feel about the last 18 months in pop. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to hear an artist like Justin Bieber just kind of say, I'm going to try some weird things. And obviously, one of the biggest pop stars on the planet trying weird things doesn't necessarily net out to like a Lou Reed album or something. But but it is charming in its own way to hear him scratch away at and degrade his own level of celebrity in the quest for art.
Yeah, stripping it all down. We're going super raw. The experimental thing we're getting is a little perfect pop song, like we just heard Daisies at the beginning. Just some guitar strumming and some cooing. And yet I still agree with you. This is not expected, both because we didn't know Justin Bieber was making, let alone putting out a full album. And we didn't know that we would get what is arguably the most coherent artistic statement of Justin Bieber's 15-year career.
Well, respect for journals. Respect for journals.
Sure, sure. We'll talk about journals. But I think this project, Swag, which I think we've both responded to. I know, it's so funny that it's just called Swag.
Let this be a lesson to you mid-career artists. Fire your teams. Just like, fire your teams.
Strip it all down.
Get weird. You know what I mean? Just be like, what's something I never got to say 10 years ago or 12 years ago? That's what my album's called.
I think both of us are coming at this in a spirit of generosity and even positivity so far, from what I can tell. And maybe the only times we've felt this in the Justin Bieber experience were like very early on YouTube in 2008. And then Journals, which you mentioned, which is his R&B mixtape. I don't even think he was allowed to put it out officially, right? We're not counting it in his studio album discography.
I don't know if it counted against his Def Jam contract?
Right,
I don't know
if
it counts against the contract. It's on streaming, but I don't know if it counts.
Yeah, so this too feels like a mixtape, but I mean that with affection and a compliment. So this is technically the 7th Justin Bieber album, if you either count Journals or the Christmas album.
Yes, also Chris Tom, pretty good. So what we're saying, Justin Bieber, emotionally rich off a mixtape? Is that what we're saying?
Yes. So I think we'll get to Journals, but when you heard this album was coming out, like 6 hours before we listened to the music, and the first headlines were Sexy Red, Gunna, Cash Cobain.
And then McGee.
And McGee. Yeah. Were you afraid?
No. First of all, no, I was relieved, number one. But I do want to step outside the narrative for a moment and say that sometimes when you profile someone, you get a real gem of a detail.
Ah, okay.
And when you profiled McGee,
yes,
you got a real gem of a detail, which is that McGee, a noted, we barely know McKee, but someone who has not seemed to lean into any of the trappings of celebrity or stardom or any of this stuff, a bit of an obscure figure. I think maybe you had the interview you did with him was the first truly high profile interview you've done, or one of the first. And you went to spend some time with McGee and you came home with this tiny little nugget swaddled in a cloth. And the nugget is McGee has been hanging with Bieber making music.
Yeah, it's true.
And I thought, what an incredible success for Justin Bieber's publicist to have gotten that information into your story about McGee.
Little did we know Justin Bieber didn't even have a publicist.
Yeah, exactly. Justin Bieber didn't even know who McGee was. He was just like, who's this guy who keeps coming around? But an incredible nugget that I think if we're going to be taxonomizing Bieber eras, that to me is the beginning of this particular Bieber era. It's the first moment where you're like, okay, for the last few years, he's been in this kind of like unpredictable public state, which mm-hmm. he also addresses on Swag, the album, which we'll get back to. Mm-hmm.
Via Drewski, America's id.
America's therapist. And there's been this sense of, did Justin Bieber have artistic intent during the peak of his career? Does he have artistic intent? Does he wish to have artistic intent? And hearing that those people were spending time together, in fact, making music together, is the first moment where you think, okay, he's molting. He's shedding something. And who knows what's going to happen. But what's funny is, so I've listened to Daisies so many times now. If you're listening to podcasts, depending when you're listening to it, our car song video about Daisies either just came out or will be out soon. It's coming in around the same time. I listened to Daisies so many times for that. And then when I was listening to it again this morning in advance of having this conversation, I realized what happened with Justin Bieber and McGee. McGee went into the studio, and this is all alleged and purported. This is just me applying the rigorous. This is rigorous critical fan fiction. McGee went in, jammed, vibed, drew that sexy guitar and just smeared it, slathered it all over the place, jammed. And everybody was like, damn, that's hard. Like, I love that. And then McGee was like, cool, dapped everybody up, like bounced. And then Bieber was like, let's make the most staccato version of that and loop it over and over again. So we have the texture of the smear and the slather, but it's very concise and rigorous. And I only, on my like 15th listen to the song, finally pieced together what that was, which is you have this sort of texture and ode to McGee, but it has been neatly put into a box. With very sharp corners.
Yeah, this is the promise of pop music. And that was actually the crux of my entire conversation with McGee, not just about Justin Bieber. McGee, a young guitarist, songwriter from New Jersey, had an album last year that was a critical and fan favorite, grassroots was viral sensation.
Was it someone's number one album of the year?
Yeah, sure. Two Star and the Dream Police, the McGee album, which is basically, I've heard people compare it to the idea of hypnagogic pop, like the idea of hearing pop from another room of the house. And McGee is very interested in these ideas of teasing hooks and anticipation and edging musically. And the thing that excited him so much about Justin Bieber and also his cohort, which we'll talk about, namely Dijon, who is McGee's main artistic spiritual partner. He was the guitarist for Dijon's band before he broke out as a solo artist. And these guys are very interested in these vintage, before they were born, ideas of what music can be and what universal music can be. And what excited them so much about working with Justin Bieber was the idea that they could be as weird as they wanted. And as Mike McGee said to me, you put Justin's voice on it and then it's pop. He just has this instrument. Everybody knows the little flutters of Justin Bieber's voice because he's been with us for essentially our whole lives, whether we like it or not.
He's been with us for a century, I thought you were about to say.
I mean, that too. And I think that's what was so exciting about these people. And when I say this is the promise of pop, to me, somebody who values the idea of the universal sublime, the monoculture, like the power of everybody feeling the same thing, taking from the underground, building it up, and then polishing it into something widely appealing. That is what pop music is. That is Madonna in dance culture in the 80s. That is whatever you want to call it, New Orleans rap, taking local rhythms and dance sounds and bringing them to the world. You know, it's this. We see this over and over again in the best slices of pop music. So for Justin Bieber to make an entire album, mixtape, whatever you want to call it, Dijon and McGee are not on every song on this album, but their DNA is in every song on this album.
Yes, they are.
Right. So they might not be credited, but...
Yes. I do want to say, I'm sure there are lawyers trying to figure out exactly if Dijon and McGee are on every song on this album, which is like not a shot at Carter Lang, who did a lot of production here, Eddie Benjamin, a lot of writing. It's not specific, but it's the aesthetic choices are clearly in the lineage of McGee and Dijon. That's where the aesthetic choices are from. It reminds me a little bit of Iggy Azalea ripping off DJ Mustard, right? On Fancy, where it's, this is a DJ Mustard song. Of course, it's not a DJ Mustard song. It's just made by a person who has the same plugins. It does feel a little bit like that. Although I do think there are bits on this album where we expand the palette a little bit more true to a little bit truer R&B. And this is something that we have talked about for many years in regards to Justin Bieber, which is on a basic level, Justin Bieber's an R&B singer. And I have often said that he's basically miscast as a pop star. Obviously, pop stardom is very little to do with the specifics of musical talent. It has a lot to do with packaging and marketing and also a kind of dogged emotional and logistical commitment to the bit. But on a purely vocal level, Justin wants to sing fluttery love songs. And clearly what he grew up on is the R&B of the 90s. And if you listen to this album, of the 80s as well. And so I was intrigued by the McGee-isms on this album, but then I was also intrigued by the kind of Maurice Starr-isms on this album.
Can we listen to a little bit of Devotion? This is a song that has Dijon as a feature. It also has Daniel Caesar in the writing credits, and it has Prince all over it.
Yes.
Well, I don't read, I don't learn if you move your body. Well, don't waste another dime. That's good jukebox money.
So that was Devotion. You have both Dijon and Bieber doing their best Prince impressions. Dijon is someone who makes lo-fi bedroom R&B soul music informed by gospel and the church. I think it's notable that this album, Swag, ends on Forgiveness, a very popular gospel standard. And this track, to me, you can feel Bieber getting permission from the people around him to tap into something and try something that's a little bit ambitious, a little bit embarrassing even, to be able to pull off the gloss that has followed him since childhood and really try to tap into something pure. And it's interesting on this album also to feel the tension, because people like McGee, like Dijon, Tobias Gesso Jr. is in here, Carter Lang, who you mentioned, who writes a lot for SZA. These are people who are top-tier songwriters. They work for the biggest artists in the world, Adele. And yet Bieber is still Bieber, and you feel the conflict of how much does he want to say? How much of himself does he want to put out there? The lyrics are where this album like falters a little bit for me.
Yeah, they're incomplete. It's a lot of incomplete stuff.
They're a little simplistic. The term that kept floating around my head listening to this all weekend was romantically horny, but in a pretty basic way. And I was having a lot of conversations with people who were surprised this weekend about how much they were liking this. And a good friend of mine, especially, struggling internally with the idea of intelligence versus taste and how those two things go together. And the idea that some people, especially in the arts, especially in criticism, critic-minded people, have this bias that intelligence and education are somehow prerequisites for taste. And I would dare to say that a project like this is challenging you on that front. And it's clear that Bieber's taste is both still developing, as we see from his Instagram stories, which have been soundtracked phenomenally over the last 6 to 8 weeks, and yet his ability to express himself as an artist or an auteur in this case, still not quite all the way there. But I actually find that tension to be very exciting when I'm listening to this.
I think my version of that tension is less about the quality of the lyrics and very much about the rhythm and patterns of the singing, because I feel like no matter how loose Bieber's allowing himself to be on this album, he falls into kind of like pop singing structure quite a bit.
It's hard to unlearn all of the things that he's been through.
Especially someone who has been famous since he's 12 or 13. It is possible that this album is the first time that he went into the studio without traditional vocal production or singing guides. Now, that said, we haven't seen the full credits. Many years ago, I spent a few days with Coo Carell, who was Justin's vocal producer. I was in the studio watching him vocal produce Justin. It is grueling work, I would say, on both sides. It's singing the same line over and over again and getting multiple takes with multiple different inflections. And then Coo Carell, at the end of the day, pasting them together into a passable audio collage, a narratively coherent collage. I don't know how much of that is happening on this album, but what I do know is that there are moments I'm waiting for Bieber to be like, all right, it's time to let loose. It's time to go. And it never quite happens. And I agree, the lyrics are incomplete in a lot of these places, but there are also some extremely lovely couplets and quatrains. And like on Devotion, which you just were talking about, there's a line where he says, I'd rather take the long way home so we can laugh and sing a couple more songs. And it's just, it's so simple. It's so clean. And there's a few spots on this album where I'm like, first of all, a pro wrote this. No way around that. A pro wrote this. But delivered, it's like a professionally written bar delivered by someone who's been singing in professional context for 15 years. It's going to hit no matter how smeary the guitar is or the synths are behind it.
Totally. And I want to talk a little bit about all of the different influences here. We've talked a little bit about Prince. We talked about the collaborators. The words we haven't said are John Mayer and Jason Mraz.
Yeah, sure.
I want to offer Jack Johnson.
You mentioned this yesterday. This is traumatic.
I want to say another name that I didn't say to you yesterday, but that I think might stir something in you.
I feel like I want to write it down so that I can hold it up on the screen if I'm right. But I can't. So go ahead. I'll tell you if I'm right.
Cody Chestnut?
Oh, okay. It's not what I was going to say. I was worried you were going to say G-Love.
Okay. We can take Cody Chestnut and G-Love, G-Love together.
Yeah. Cody Chestnut. Yeah. That double CD. Definitely multiple copies of that in my storage unit.
I'm sure. But yes, this acoustic post-neo-soul white boy swag, for lack white of a swag, better
yeah,
term.
Literally.
And then, of course, the Long Tail of Blonde.
Long Tail of Blonde. And also something that I was thinking a lot about in terms of the acoustic thing, and I'm glad you brought up Cody Chestnut, because when we were thinking about Cody Chestnut in real time, when it was happening, 45 years ago, when it was happening.
Approximately, yeah.
Yes. A couple things that were brought up for me listening to this album, especially the less classically R&B songs, because the R&B stuff on this album, the true R&B stuff, really feels like New Edition 1984 to 1988. So I mentioned Maurice Starr earlier, obviously Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. I'm hearing like Can You Stand the Rain, at least on two different songs. The texture of the synth, like whatever the synth pack is, it feels like it's just derived directly from those sessions. But I was thinking about soul singers and soul performers who had undermined the sort of primacy of church singing in favor of something more acoustic and eclectic prior to that. And I was thinking, or in time with that, I was thinking about Tony, a Bay Area group with a tremendously broad musical palette
and so much range in their customization of soul music in that period. And also, I feel like I'm going to get absolutely stung for this one. I don't want to say the words Bill Withers and Justin Bieber in the same sentence necessarily, right? I don't
Via Rafael Sadiq. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. But it's not, if you go back and listen to, obviously, the really good Bill Withers stuff, like there's mood and intelligence on those songs that is not here. But in terms of the gentleness of the approach, in terms of the softness of it, and the way that Bill Withers connotes a lot without necessarily delivering at an intensity level, that is what I think on a basic level, what Justin Bieber is good at. Now, I feel like they're going to send people to my house for saying that, but it did remind me of that a little bit.
And I think this whole conversation of vibe and memory, nostalgia, what this reminds you of, that's what these guys thrive on. I remember speaking to Justin Vernon of Bon Iver when I was writing the McGee piece, and he was talking about being on tour with Mike and Dijon, and that they would just sit around and name songs and play songs and show each other stuff and pull up deep cuts, and that they just have this knowledge. And you can imagine all of these guys, Eddie, Carter, Tobias, Justin, Dee, and Mike, and all of them just sitting around like playing each other licks and showing each other videos and trying to evoke those feelings. That spirit is in this album, which again, I just don't think it can be overstated that we've arrived here in Justin Bieber's career, that he could be in those rooms having those kinds of conversations and then turning out the best approximation of those feelings that they could, which in 2025 is, I think, more than enough. And I just think like, Bieber obviously has great songs. Daisies, I think you mentioned in your song video, there's a little Love Yourself in there. One of the voiciest, most understated, but greatest Justin Bieber singles. Purpose, I think, is a strong album. Changes and Justice, the ones from 2020 and 2021, not that. I think you could really feel the disconnect there. It boggled my mind in preparation for this, remembering that Justice was nominated for Song, Record, and Album of the Year at the Grammys on the back of Peaches. Remember Peaches?
I'm so much more sympathetic to Peaches than a lot of people. Shout out Gibeon on that record.
But Peaches was obviously a path here. And I do want to just do a quick pocket history of the last few years of Justin Bieber's life and career, because I want to talk about how his public persona is playing into this and how I think this sort of reoriented where people were going in terms of what they thought of Bieber the celebrity. So remember in 2018, he marries Hailey Baldwin.
That's my baby. She's iconic. iPhone case, lip gloss on it. Chef's kiss. Chef's kiss. Great stuff.
They had a child this year.
Not discussed that much.
But in the imagery for this album, the Justin Bieber's family as Calvin Klein shoot, which a fine aesthetic.
True dad's love.
Yes, dad's love. We'll get there. I hope. Maybe we'll go out with dad's love.
Swag.
Swag. Yes, I'm calling the end of this podcast already. And then you get these two pandemic-y albums, which feel weird. And when Justin goes back out on tour for Justice in 2022, it's a disaster. He's suffering from facial paralysis. He eventually cancels the concert. He goes into a huge amount of debt, reportedly, because he'd been advanced money from the tour. He borrows it from Scooter Braun, his manager from day one. That seems to be a headache that is ongoing.
And not his manager anymore. Scooter no longer manages.
Right. And that, you know, is part of or a sticking point in their eventual split. Early 2023, Justin sells the publishing for his whole catalog in a $200 million deal. And then of late, you've seen him, let's say, agitated often, especially with the paparazzi. It's not clocking to you that I'm standing on business, immediately entered the lexicon. But we've had this, are we worried
and
about him?
And they say he doesn't write. And they say he doesn't write.
You know, we've had this sort of concern trolling, but also genuine hand-wringing, echoes of Britney Spears, this horrible cycle with the paparazzi where it's, is he fragile or are they making him fragile? Every time he gets agitated, that just means hit the videos of him blowing up are going to be worth more money when they sell it to TMZ or whatever it is. And then we're here and he puts out something that feels like it allows fans and the public to exhale a little bit. I don't know if that's how you felt receiving this, but because of how bumpy his last few years have been, we alluded to this, his whole team is gone. He's retrenched with a tighter circle, tons of anonymous reports, weird photos, erratic posting on Instagram. And yet swag just feels like a balm to me.
Balm or bomb?
I said balm.
Just checking.
But it is also like, it's a bomb that's throwing of some sort.
Could have gone either way. Right. That was not a judgy question. That was a sincere question. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back afterwards. And during that break, we are going to get involved in this week's Song of the Week. You can find the videos of me driving around talking about new singles every week on our TikTok and Instagram at Popcast, also on our YouTube shorts, and also at nytimes.com. This week, let's do the somber, back to Friends. We're talking about Justin, a kind of pop star of the 2010s. Let's talk about what a pop star of the 2020s might sound like. So here's Song of the Week about somber's Back to Friends.
Has a pop star ever just snuck up on you out of nowhere? How weepy is that new somber song? Get in, let's talk about it. 6 months ago, maybe no one had ever truly reckoned with the artistic output of somber. And right now, somber has two songs in the top 40 on the Billboard Hot 100. Somber just turned 20, he's tall, he's got razor sharp cheekbones. This is someone who is a full package before you even know that you've received the package. Every somber song is about hookup culture in some way, but mostly it's about how sad hookup culture makes you feel. It's about how dark it makes you feel. It's about how it puts you in a tunnel of emotional emptiness. Come on, dog. This song is a feeling. It's saying, we did this thing, it didn't work out, now what? Is it a little bit dry to listen to? It is. The emotional palette is not that wide here. All of Somber's songs are in this kind of like moody gray color. The way that it marches, it's almost funereal. The foggy quality of the music really reminds me of Children. But if it was made for arenas, not smoky little rooms. There's also a bunch of 90s Britpop in here. That tunefulness really recalls a lot of the best British bands of that era. The real question for me is, why is somber so popular right now? Sure, I hear a lot of somber on TikTok. Breakup TikToks, sad news TikToks, family trauma TikToks. But to me, that doesn't account for the broad-based popularity that he's experiencing. As a critic, part of what I do is try to understand what takes something from a curio to a phenomenon. Somber and Back to Friends is clearly heading towards phenomenon territory, but it's still vague and fuzzy to me. Dog, there's a Hobby Lobby down here? Wild.
I'm Judson Jones. I'm a reporter and meteorologist at the New York Times. For about 2 decades, I've been covering extreme weather, which is getting worse because of climate change. And it's becoming more important to get timely and accurate weather information. That's why we send these customized newsletters letting you know up to 3 days in advance about extreme weather that could impact you or a place you care about. At The Times, you can be confident that everything we publish is based off the most accurate, scientific, and vetted information available to us. Because we want you to be able to make real-time decisions about how to go about your life. This is the kind of work that makes subscribing to The New York Times so valuable. And it's how you can support fact-based, independent journalism. So if you'd like to subscribe, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
We're back. I'm John. That's Joe. This is Popcast.
we're picking back up talking about Justin Bieber's swag. I worry sometimes, especially post-Britney, that once a person becomes so famous, it is so easy to continue to invest energy in them as a celebrity, not an artist, and to identify the kind of travails of fame as art in and of itself. And you're rooting, it's like you're polymarketing it a little bit. Oh, he's up, he's down. Yep. It's bad year, good year, comeback, no comeback. Could he come back? And it has nothing to do with art. And if people know one thing about Popcast, this is an art-first show. What I will say is in the months immediately leading up to the release of this album, that was maybe not the first time I've ever had genuine concerns about Justin Bieber's well-being. I mean, I can't even remember which tour it was at this point, where he was like trapped in a Lucite box dangling over the crowd and did the entire show like in prison of his own making. Dark stuff, really troubling stuff. But I was like, okay, maybe there will never be a reclamation of the plot. Maybe he will just be a guy who was incredibly famous, and then he then married a person who made a lot of money in the cosmetics and accessories industry, and then they are just forever tabloid figures. And so not only was the release of Swag a bit of a relief on its just on pure terms, like, okay, there's music here and there's something thoughtful and substantive, but I also was like, maybe you got to go through that in order to arrive at a new idea of yourself. Because I imagine, especially if you think of the last two albums, to your point, they're muddled, they're confused. They live very much in the shadow of pop star Justin, like peak pop star Justin. And this is an album that does not do that. This is an album that proposes, I don't want to say shrinking his fame, because I don't think you can shrink the fame of a person who's as famous. And also, he announced a huge world tour pretty much right away when the album came out. He's doing like a huge tour next year. So he's saying, yeah, you might have been worried about me, but actually, I've been cooking and I'm ready to play. And the things that you have come to expect of me in the last year or two and being concerned and, like you say, concern trolling, maybe that was ill-placed. There's a moment on this album where he's doing a therapy. I think it's called Therapy Session. It's like a skit with Drewski. And they're having like an off-the-cuff conversation, seemingly. And Justin says, people are always asking if I'm okay. And that starts to really weigh on me. And I can imagine how draining that might be, because then you probably have to keep asking yourself, wait, damn, am I okay?
And he seems to be doing a lot of this work in public. If you followed his social media output over the last couple of months, it is very much about healing and forgiveness and forgiving yourself. And he launched a new clothing brand. He disavowed his old clothing brand. In the video that launched it, he rides a scooter, get it, into a house, which he then burns down. This is somebody who is molting and trying to reset the terms of a very strange life, a very strange career, child stardom in general, one of the most whacked out American traditions. And he's very much a poster child for that, for the good and the bad of that. And to see him reclaim and reset the narrative on his own musical terms is, honestly, we haven't seen a lot like this, I think, from someone at his level. And like you said, he's getting back out there with a tour. There's reports that there's another album to follow, that there's a proper big pop album after this. I hope it's not a Journals situation where this is totally sidelined. We mentioned Journals. That was the sort of R&B mixtape that he put out that seemed to really come from his heart and soul in the first moment of Justin Bieber concern trolling. He's hanging out with rappers. He's speeding in his sports car in Miami. He's getting in trouble.
He was swagging?
He was peeing in a bucket. Remember the Bill Clinton photo?
I forgot about it. Yes. Wow. Wow. Real Ariana licking donut energy.
Yes. And he was a kid then. He was a young teen. People have come out since then, himself and Scooter, and said he had a problem with pills or was smoking too much, whatever it was. Like, we've been through this before. And they always seemed to like put him back in his metaphorical box. And I think he's freed himself of that now, but I hope that this wasn't just only a palate cleanse. I hope he feels he can continue to chase this version of himself, because I think it's really interesting musically.
Also, the thing you said something earlier in the show that I know to be true, but I don't agree with, which is like the promise of pop is you can take something a little bit unusual and universalize it and find a way for it. And to me, that always sounds like top down, big bad pop producers. It's very Drake like trolling for novelty and be like,
right. I choose not to see those things cynically, but I know what you mean.
Yes, but I think they can it can scan that way. And to me, actually, the promise of pop is slightly different, which is something unusual can, without any interlocutor, without any tastemaker approval, without any cynicism, can suddenly be put on a huge platform and be incredibly popular. And I think that is more true now than it ever has been because of the relative frictionlessness of the internet. But in a way, what Bieber's doing is a little bit old-fashioned, which is just being like, I'm a super famous guy and I hired a weird producer. That's something that's happened in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s, and the 2000s and 2010s. When I was listening to the McGee album, the actual McGee album, not this, the actual McGee album, to me, that's the promise of pop. It's this thing that sort of came from a relatively obscure place. It is actually an incredibly clear-minded expression of pop ideology using a totally unusual toolkit. And no, that album did not become a number one or number two or even number 10 or 20 album, but someone who knows what number one, number two, number 10 album sounds like heard that record and said, yep, that guy knows. And that, to me, that's the promise of pop. It's less someone coming down and universalizing a thing. It's that that thing can live anywhere. You just have to have eyes open to see it and ears open to hear it.
One of the things we haven't talked about before we go, I think we should touch on, is the sort of hip-hop influence
swag.
On this album. The swag. You have Gunna, Sexy Red, Cash Cobain, most notably spread throughout, especially the back half of this album.
Yes.
I don't know about you. Extremely exciting for me to hear Sexy Red say the things that she says on Sweet Spot over a beat that sounds like that.
Yeah. So I was thinking a lot about why does the Sexy Red verse work for me so much and the Gunna verse doesn't work for me so much. And although Gunna does reference Horse and Boost in his verse, which is a sort of expensive jewelry line, probably the first guy to get that in a rap. So kudos to him. I'm really doing the work. But I was trying to figure out the difference between those two verses. And I think Gunna delivered a Gunna verse that didn't have a lot to do with the context it was being delivered in, whereas Sexy Red, I think, listened to the song and said, how can I apply my Sexy Redness to this? And I think for Sexy, who, as much as I like Sexy, most of her verses sound pretty similar. They're pretty interchangeable. This is not that. Like, she came to play. And it's I thought it was really impressive.
And in terms of the cross-pollination of worlds here, I do like to imagine what it would sound like for Gunna or Thug or Baby or Sexy or Glow to put out a mixtape that sounds like this. What would it mean for them to borrow a palette from the underground? And I think that's
and Cash Cobain did it.
The Cash Cobain record.
Yeah.
Like, that's why Cash Cobain's presence here is so interesting on the title track Swag, because he's doing something similar, which is bringing his own palette to a group of people who have maybe been stuck a little bit in the lane, a very impressive lane, a lane that they created, but yet one that doesn't value experimentation as much. So to hear Cash Cobain doing his thing alongside Bieber and with Eddie Benjamin, who's a Bieber person, confidant, I want to say, who also has some of these ideas in his own solo music. The mess of that here on the 18th track of a weird album mixtape called Swag, that feels somewhat special to me because you can imagine it breaking containment and moving up and around the music ecosystem.
Let's listen to the Cash Cobain like opening quasi verse on Swag. I agree with what you're saying. Like, the thing that I was so struck by is lyrically, it's clearly a Cash Cobain structure, but filtered or whatever vocal production tricks are being used here, reframed for this kind of psychedelic space soul thing that Justin's trying to do. But then if you mixed this with anything from any slizzy record that you could find, if you mix this in, it would go well, even if the foundation of the production is actually very different. Like, Cash Cobain doesn't abandon the purity of what he's good at, but found a way to hybridize it on the go. I thought it was impressive. And weirdly, should that be the single? Like, actually, should that be the single? That song could go, I think.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Daisy's trajectory is and then how the rest of this either trickles up or doesn't. I feel the same way about Yukon. The same way about 405. Some of these songs with more vocal treatments really stand out to me. I find myself returning to them. Yeah, Yukon, a real highlight for me. Another track that Dijon produced on. Maybe we just listen to a second of that. And yeah, I'm interested if you have deep cut favorites on here as well.
So yeah, Yukon to me also a standout. One of my notes on that was like voice modulation, but not the usual Bieber voice modulation.
Right.
This is a person whose voice has been run through various technologies for 15 years. And so we understand Bieber as digital effluvia, but this is different. It still sounds like him, but it's a different kind of digital rendering. And I found it quite good.
One of the things we haven't mentioned that you just made me think of is Where Are You Now and the Bieber Jack U era, which was his collaborations with Diplo and Skrillex. That was the moment where people first thought, oh, it's not just that kid with the bangs from the baby video. Maybe he's an artiste. And they were able to use his voice in this dance production way. You get the dolphin hook sound. That's famously his voice run through a bazillion little filters made into its own hook. And I do think, whereas that felt more like they were using Bieber as a tool, as an instrument, they were puppet stringing him and his natural abilities, this feels more like a democratic collaboration in Swag. And so I think they're connected, but we've come to this moment where it feels like Bieber has more agency.
It's funny because I think those songs are the songs that guaranteed that Justin Bieber is still famous today. But in the time, I was just like, man, these aren't good Justin Bieber songs. These are incredibly stitched tight productions that happen to feature Justin Bieber. But these are not great Justin Bieber songs. Now, of course, in the rear view, that all like blurs together a little bit. And without those songs, I don't think any of the next 10 years happen. Those songs are his adult pop hits. They are his post-teen heartthrob pop hits. So they're important. And also, I think, to your point, set up the idea of Justin as someone who you can play with his voice. Others were doing it, and now he's doing it.
Exactly.
I think the other song that I would just mention briefly is the first song, actually. It's All I Can Take. So let's listen just a touch of the intro in this. I mentioned a couple times Early New Edition on the episode today. You think of the R&B that was getting made coming out of the electropop of the early to mid 80s and Maurice Starr and New Edition, and then later Maurice Starr and New Kids on the Block. To me, some of the best moments on this album really evoke that era. And it doesn't surprise me. That's an era that speaks to Justin, who I believe is probably an R&B aficionado. Like, truly, I bet it's what he listens to in his car, whether it's the Bugatti or the Fisker or whatever he's driving to the beach.
In between Draco the Ruler songs.
Yes. So it works as R&B, but also given the collaborators here, like McGee and Dijon, I don't know if that's the era that they're specifically trying to echo, because I do think a lot of the things that McGee is playing with feel very much derived from maybe, like, forgive the phrase, but like a whiter psychedelia, even though there is a lot of soul music on McGee's album.
Adult contemporary.
Yeah. But to me, I would be shocked if he wasn't listening to the productions that were coming out of R&B music in these years, especially like 84, 85, and 86, leading into the Quiet Storm era. I'd be shocked if that wasn't on his mind too. So this is an interesting moment where two people who I think have the same reference point, but coming at it from different angles, can create something novel from that shared reference point. Even though McGee, I don't think, worked on this song, but again, in spirit.
That brings us to Lil B, the godfather of swag himself.
Mm-hmm.
There were photos of him hanging out with Bieber a couple weeks ago that set the table for this. And then you have him here on Dad's Love, doing basically like a plur sermon,
yeah,
about positivity.
Wow. Rave back. 88 yeah. back.
Yeah, like,
this isn't what most rappers talk about when they're bringing 88 back, but it is 88 back.
Yeah, like this sort of house music preaching all about the love of a father, which, like, what could be better? Lil B, Dad's Love. Like, this is such a strange thing to encounter on
a Justin Bieber album.
Yeah, and it really is a marker of, yeah, all these strands of the last decade and a half of internet and pop and underground and making something truly weird and unique. So unless you have anything else.
No, before we end on that, because I think it's a great place to end, but I do want to say we've talked a lot about what does it mean to mainstream an unusual sound, and what does it mean, like, if it comes from the bottom up or the top down? But I think something that's important to remember is that it's less Lil B I'm talking about, and more Tyler here, Tyler the Creator,
who took that baton and
yes,
made a movement.
Now, when Odd Future first arrived, they were radicals, they were upstarts, they were shit starters. They painted themselves as
disruptors.
Yes. And the other thing that was funny that happened with Odd Future is Odd Future very quickly became friends with young Hollywood. There was like a Twitter thread I saw the other day of like all these photos of Tyler and Kendall Jenner from 10 years ago. And if we think about Justin Bieber 10 years ago, maybe it wouldn't clock to you that Justin Bieber probably was hanging out with these guys and couldn't incorporate some of that into his songs because he's at his pop peak, but he's hanging out. And so when I see the title Swag, when I see Lil B on this album, I'm like, is this Justin Bieber going back to scratch his own personal nostalgia itch and also trying to recapture some kind of feeling from a moment in which he felt that maybe that feeling had been denied to him? And not to get too poetic about what swag might mean to a young star, but imagine if everybody around you, everyone you hang out with, people you like, people you admire, people you think are creatively provocative, are just swag, 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 swag. And you're like, where are you now? Maybe there's something there. And so this might be a full circle moment. We might be revisiting some unearthed thing within him. That's my armchair psychiatrist.
Free little twist and little za.
For real, though. For real, though. For real.
So let's go out with Dad's Love.
Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. Get us on YouTube at podcast, on Instagram at podcast, on TikTok at podcast. Get in the car with me as we talk about songs every week on all channels and on nytimes.com. An incredible place to see those videos on our homepage.
That's me and Joe. Popcast is out. We'll be back next week. This is Dad Love.